This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who aspire to be. If you're a real estate, mortgage, or financial professional, this is the place for you. We'll explore innovative investment analysis, sales, marketing, and income-generating strategies for the most historically proven wealth creator, income property. Learn from the experts as they show you how to build a better business and a better life.
Welcome to the AIPIS show for accredited income property investment specialists and those who desire to be. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about increasing your income, your productivity, and just generally having a better life while serving your clients better with America's most historically proven asset class, income property. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds. It's my pleasure to welcome Marshall Saunders to the show. He is the co-founder and managing partner of Saunders Daily, and he's named one of Swanepoel's 200 most powerful people in residential real estate and Risk Media's real estate tech titan. Marshall, how are you?
I'm very good. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. So what is going on in the world of crowdfunding? I mean, this is just, you know, I've long said that it's such a game changer, but you know, it's hard to tell how much adoption there really has been. Certainly, there are crowdfunding companies cropping up everywhere. That's sort of the way things usually happen when, you know, laws change and new opportunities develop. You know, maybe you can give us some insight into what's going on with it. I mean, is a lot of money really moving over to crowdfunding-oriented investments? Is anyone really keeping track of it?
I don't think anyone's really adequately keeping track of the amount of money going into crowdfunding. And you're right, it is extremely popular. It's a very big buzzword. A lot of things are happening. A lot of laws are changing. A lot of excitement and momentum is moving there. How much the actual crowd is coming with it and how much of the American population even really knows what's going on, apart from people who are interested in it, that remains to be seen. I do believe it is fundamentally a game changer. That word is, I think, overused a lot, but it really is fundamentally true here. This is a game changer in how people invest in startups, invest in businesses, invest in real estate. But I think it will take a long time for it to become part of the general American consciousness, and it will take a long time before it is fully reaches its potential. But we're at the precipice right now with changes coming from the SEC and more crowdfunding companies out there every single day. I think we will see this be a major force in investing over the next decade or so.
Well, you know, Marshall, it kind of makes me think of democratization. I think that the world is becoming so democratized in so many ways. And, you know, we can thank the internet for virtually all of it, whether it be news media, whatever. There's just so many areas. It's, you know, the sharing economy. It's not even worth going into because it'd take an hour just to talk about them. But crowdfunding is part of that. You know, the SEC, otherwise known as the Scoundrels Encouragement Commission, has never been for the people, although that's what they pretend to be. They're really for the big, you know, Wall Street players, and they've helped them preserve semi-monopolies for decades now and make it very, very difficult for smaller players and new players to enter the market and raise capital and, you know, for a real estate deal or a business, you know, just, you know, anybody listening out there, if you've got a company, a small to medium sized business, just try taking it public. Good luck with that. See if you can manage the compliance and the expense and, you know, the attorneys and the accountants and the ongoing, you know, it's impossible. You can't play in that game. But crowdfunding has opened up the door to play in a different way in that world. What are your thoughts on that democratization?
I totally agree with you. It is a major democratization of the investing system and the and security system. But like with any time, democracy is messy. Democracy is annoying. Democracy is loud. Democracy is kind of scary because there's a lot of voices and a lot of different feelings, and it kind of looks, sometimes freedom looks a lot like chaos. And I think that we're going through that period with crowdfunding too, as this becomes more open to the general public and the requirements that the SEC has for accredited investors becomes lowered. We'll see tons of people out there screaming and yelling about crowdfunding, and some will say it's the doom of us all. Some will be out there scamming people in the name of crowdfunding. And it's just going to be kind of a messy time, but that's what freedom is. Freedom is messy. And if you're in a totalitarian or fascist state, the trains run on time and it's clean and it's orderly and everyone knows their position and no one has personal freedom. So I do believe that crowdfunding is a major and I would say necessary democratic step in society. I really believe in kind of a cultural evolution, and I believe that the internet happened for a reason. It came about almost as if we were sprouting an arm or growing a leg or something like that. It came about because it can combine the efforts of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, if not billions of people, and combines our efforts and allows us to leverage numbers to do something incredibly great. And so instead of having one person that needs to come up with $5,000 to give a little girl a surgery, she can go out and she can raise from 1,000 people $5. That would have been impossible back before the internet, going door to door to door to door. She would have needed to get major news coverage or something of the sort. But she can do this now on her own in a matter of days. It's leveraging the power, the eyeballs of so many people on the internet to leverage the numbers to do something great, even though we're all making very small contributions individually.
Yeah, it really is amazing. So tell us how this evolved through the SEC, and give us the points. It started with the Jobs Act, right? And then what happened next, and what happened next, and what happened just recently?
Right. Well, to the beginning, crowdfunding was all over the place back in the early 1900s. Henry Ford started Motor Company through crowdfunding, going town to town to town, approaching people he didn't know to try to get money to start his company. And there was many, many crowdfunding efforts in the 1933, the fall of the national economy, people were being ripped off, and so they instituted the rule of accredited investor and said, hey, if you don't have money to lose, you simply can't invest. It's against the law unless it's a SEC approved or registered commodity, and that lasted forever. We're approaching 80 to 100 years where that was the norm. In 2012, Congress passed and President Obama signed the Jobs Act, and it was called the Jobs Act because no one could, in a down economy, no one could vote against the Jobs Act. It was kind of a Trojan horse because it was actually jumpstart our business startups. And what that did was Title II allowed a 506C company like us, that's what we do, as long as you're going to accredited investors and you're only seeking accredited investors, you can generally solicit. We can take out ads in the paper. And the most critical thing is you can have a site.
Hopefully you're not advertising in the paper.
Yeah, we are. We absolutely
Well, that's so old-fashioned, but well, okay, go ahead.
We're also the internet company, but what my point is, it used to be that you had to know somebody and you had to have a private personal relationship with the person running the investment to the person who was investing. you know, it's kind of like the old boys club, right? It's just about the personification of that. Well, this allowed general solicitation. So when you have a website, you don't know who's seeing that website. So that really is speaking to a general audience. Title III of the Jobs Act that was passed in 2012 allowed for true crowdfunding, where unaccredited investors could invest. And that law gave the SEC a certain period of time, which was pretty short, about 270 days, to come out with their requirements. Like they could limit the amount of investment that a crowdfunding site was looking at, or limit the amount of investment any individual could put in, all those kind of things. And it gave them pretty free rein to come out with those rules. Well, that was 3.5 years ago, and they still haven't come out with that rule. There is some idea that soon rules will come out regarding Title III, and that Title III will then be part of the national investing lexicon. And if you follow the rules very closely, which the SEC will certainly make sure that you do, that you can have unaccredited people participating in crowdfunding ventures.
Interesting. Okay, so just clarify that last one. So you can have an unlimited number of people participating, whereas before you couldn't? Is that what you're saying?
Actually, in Title III, we don't know yet, okay? The rules will come out, but that will probably allow unlimited number of people, but it will restrict the amount of money that you can raise from accredited and unaccredited investors, and it will restrict the amount that an unaccredited investor can give to a crowdfunding site. So it's still going to be a little bit patronizing, right? It's still going to say, hey, if you make under $200,000, you need to be controlled. You can't invest your money where and when you want to, or in the amounts that you want to, because you're obviously too dumb to understand that on your own. So we need to protect you. And so even though that patronizing does bother me, it's a little bit of, you know, get our toe in the door and let's prove ourselves and let's prove that this system works and can be managed properly. And then over time, hopefully that door will widen, 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 and maybe those restrictions will go away altogether.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, so get your toe in the door. I get it. So is this a game changer for real estate? I mean, tell us what you think this means to the real estate market. And let me just seed that question a little bit, okay? Of course it means access to bigger deals for the little guy, okay? Of course, it means, like you say, freedom is messy. There's going to be, I believe, tons of fraud. People will get ripped off. There will be criminals. There's always been criminals, but now, you know, they've got like a new platform, right? So you can address that. I don't know if it's a fair comment. I mean, you're a crowdfunding company, so you might want to say, no, that's not true. We're great. You know, whatever you think, you know, we're audited, you know, so say that if you want. And then here's the angle that I don't know if many people are talking about it. You know, if this really, really takes off, number one, does it mean there will be a lot of money moving away from the old school Wall Street investments and moving into crowdfunded real estate and business investments, which will increase values of these properties? You know, it's the classic definition of inflation, right? A big supply of dollars chasing a limited supply of goods and services. So, you know, Not many people seem to be talking about that angle. Like, is it's going to push prices up because there's more money coming at it?
Well, first of all, I do agree. This will be an avenue for shysters, and not even shysters, but people who come along and their investments would have been booted out the door by a bank or a more savvy investor. But now, because they have way more eyeballs looking at their possible investment, they can get funding where they couldn't have in a better market or in a different market. And that might mean that less desirable or more questionable investments get out there. Nonetheless, you know, that's totally aside from the people who are actually just trying to rip people off. And like you said, the people who are just openly ripping people off, I guess, you know, they can do that now. So I'm not so sure that that's going to be made much worse by crowdfunding.
Well, wait, let's just examine that for a moment if we could. They can do it now. You're absolutely right. And, you know, look, my thing is about direct real estate investing. I am fascinated with crowdfunding. I like being a direct investor. You know, I do this thing I call the 10 commandments of successful investing. And commandment number 3 is thou shalt maintain control, you know. But of course, as a direct investor, you have limitations. You know, you don't have access to some deals, right? If you're only playing with your own money and buying your own properties directly, you have limitations. But at least the likelihood is you're not going to get defrauded because it's just going to be you, you know, doing the deal, and you're directly in control of it. And if you've got some education about it, you know, you're going to make good decisions most likely. But certainly a shyster can go out there and set up an LLC and say, hey, look, we're going to buy this building, and they can go around to the people they know and raise money and then defraud them and rip them off, right? That's what you're talking about. But, you know, with crowdfunding, it's like now you got a big platform. You know, the whole world is your oyster now, right? So it's different in that way, isn't it?
I totally agree. And that, I mean, as much as we can, have our frustrations with the SEC, that's why they've taken so long to do this, because it takes a long time to get your arms around how are they going to monitor this. And I got a feeling that there will be some sort of federal registration of all crowdfunding portals and investments. It will be somehow registered. You know, somebody's got to keep track of what goes on here and who the players are and whether this is a legit investment or not.
I know, but then aren't we going to move into, you know, that, I mean, yes, that all sounds great, right? But, you know, it could move us into the whole thing that we just described that we didn't like, the lack of democratization, right? Because, you know, undoubtedly, there's going to be a new compliance burden. There's going to be, they're going to charge some fees, you know, and here we go again. Now it's like doing an IPO, but it'll be easier, obviously. I know.
Yeah, it's going to be an IPO light, and probably light.
A third less
light.
Filling than your regular IPO. Yeah, no, exactly. It's probably going to be very light. I get it. I got you.
But I think the number that you pulled out there, I think it's going to be literally maybe a third to a 20% of what you used to have to do. If it's a complicated IPO, well then, or a complicated crowdfunding venture, then, you know, it might be just as much. But, you know, if you're having a single building, like we have a fourplex that we're offering right now on our site, if it's a single building, we're setting up one single asset LLC for that building. The people come onto our site. If they're interested, they read our PPM, they read all of our background information and all of our documentation. They can even go out and see the property with us if they wish. And they say, okay, I want to buy a share of that LLC. And they give us $2,500 as the minimum investment in that particular property. And that would get them one share of that LLC. And then they are on the state record. They are a literal owner of that LLC, and the only thing that LLC owns is that one property.
Single purpose LLC.
Yep, single asset LLC. And then they do not have control everyday decisions. We are the manager. We are the B shares, but we manage and we control the property. However, in every single LLC, we build in kind of catastrophic control. Like if I, you know, just go crazy, or if I don't show up, or I can't be found, all of the investors get the name and contact information of the other owners, obviously. And we even have ownership meetings and ownership parties. But, if 72% get together, or, you know, a supermajority get together and vote that, yes, we are going to get together and we are going to wrest control of this LLC away from these people, they can do so. But it's obviously different from everyday control. That's catastrophic control. But yes, you know, the world is going to be, you know, it's going to take some settling down and some controls put into place. I do believe democratization, true democratization, is in the future, but it might be kind of a measured approach. We might not see the true democratization for a while until we can kind of get some rules under us and some kind of protocols of how crowdfunding is done.
Okay. So what do you think about the prices? Did you really address that issue, the prices of real estate?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry.
I think that's the part nobody's really talking much about. I don't really hear any. It feels like I'm the only one talking about that, but maybe I'm not.
Well, I do agree that the more money, the more buyers, it can kind of inflate the market. But I think one of the biggest aspects is what we're going to see is more equity. That when these properties are bought, they aren't bought with 10% down, 20% down, but they are bought with 50%, 60%, 100% sometimes. That's why initially the larger banks and even the local banks were kind of against crowdfunding. And now they're kind of seeing the other side of it really positive, because they can give a 50% loan to value ratio loan. They make money, and their risk is so much lower because there's so much more equity in the market. And I think that that's a huge positive. One of the reasons that I started this company is I was a broker of a very large brokerage back when the economy tanked and the housing market went down. And what I saw was people were losing investment properties when the value went down by 10%. I mean, you know, an economy should be able to take, and a housing market should be able to take a 10% hit in value, maybe even a 20% hit in value, without seeing that sharp of a rise in foreclosure. We need more equity in not only the investment market, but the single-family home ownership market. And I think that's something that crowdfunding brings to the table.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point you make. I mean, I totally get what you're saying about the, you know, the crowdfunding deals, but how's that going to change the single family home market? I mean, yeah, you know, I love leverage as an investor because, you know, it amplifies your returns and lowers your risk. It's great. But, you know, for the overall economy and, you know, the market being less volatile, I mean, I can definitely see the advantage there, and maybe for the solvency of the banks or the government not having to print money to bail them out. How's that going to change the single family home market?
I think it might be big. This is where I leave what I'm actually doing and kind of talk more theoretically or fantastically about the future. But there may be a time when a person is buying a single family home and they go to a crowdfunding site to help them get the 50% down payment. Or the 20% down payment, or maybe even the entire mortgage. You know, it provides that whole idea that you're more in charge of the economy than just, will the bank approve me, will the bank not approve me?
So how would that work? Like, just speculate on that if you would, because I mean, certainly you can go on Kickstarter now and make a video of you sobbing and crying and say, I need a home for my family. And, you know, you might get it.
Right.
Okay. You might, you know, people might fund your house. Certainly there's everything on there. And I mean, I think it's awesome. Like, what a way to give to charity and do something for your fellow human being. Right. But I'm sure there's some shysters out there doing those campaigns too. But how would that work? Like, would it say, you know, this is from an equity point of view, not a charity point of view. Would you say, like, hey, I'm trying to buy a, you know, a $300,000 house for my family, blah, 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 and we've got $20,000, but we need 10% down, so we need $30,000 plus closing costs. So we need about, you know, $45,000, just round it off. And, you know, if we could just raise another $25,000, we can get a home for our family. And, you know, maybe people throw $100 each at it, you know, just to be, you know, to be part of it. What would they do? Give them little equity pieces for $100 each?
Yeah, absolutely. Give them a second mortgage position, a second lien position. Obviously, the bank, the primary mortgage holder, would have to be okay with it.
Debt, not equity, though. That's debt. But okay, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, and then yes, they would be either a debt holder, because a lot of crowdfunding sites real estate crowdfunding sites are raising money for debt offerings, it might be a debt offering. And you say, hey, listen, you know, I'm getting my primary mortgage for 4%, but I will pay 6% on this additional $10,000 and pay everyone off, balloon payment this and or something like that, or maybe interest-only payments, and then pay off the principal in 4 years. And then you go out and you try to do that. And you go out on either a dedicated site for mortgages, or you're going out and just saying that on a general crowdfunding site. Again, this is not something necessarily in my business plan, but as you kind of start seeing all the aspects of real estate and all the aspects of crowdfunding, that reality, though it seems so distant right now, could become something real very, very soon. And I think it's just an interesting a facet of the business and how it could. And just think of the mortgage company probably wouldn't care that much, right? Okay, so now I have more equity in. I'm still in first position. So it's a 70, you know, I'm giving a 70% loan rather than an 80% loan.
Right. As long as, here's the way the mortgage company views that, though. The mortgage company, and I know you know this, so I'm just sharing it for the audience's benefit, but they want you as the actual borrower usually to have some skin of your own in the game. It's great that their loan to value, their LTV ratio is better. It's more secure for the bank, but they still want you to have some of your own skin in the game. You know, they don't want you to raise it all crowdfunded because you walk away from everything. You know, you have nothing to lose, right?
Oh, yeah. I would imagine that. So, I mean, it just works like that now, even when, you know, when a parent gives you money or when a friend gives you a down payment, they might say, okay, well, you need more down, though. You know, like they might move their percentage from, 80% financing to 70% financing if you're getting that. And I could definitely see a mortgage company making that requirement, like, hey, if you're going to crowdfund, we need a higher down payment from you then, and you need to work harder.
I agree. I mean, you know, it would be great if the banks, I mean, the banks are so stupid. I'm just going to say it. They just don't play ball with sensical things. I mean, I will bet you, you know, and this is on a separate tangential issue, but I will bet you that of the millions and millions of people who intentionally chose to do strategic defaults during the Great Recession just a few years ago, okay, if the mortgage companies had real people answering the damn phone with a brain who was not a Philippine call center reading a script, if they actually had thinking people, okay, not script readers, you know, helping the borrowers, there would have been millions less, fewer foreclosures. I'll just bet you, you know, if they would think and talk and work things out and say, okay, we'll take a deed in lieu of foreclosure. You know, we want to work out a short sale with you. B of A seemed to finally get smart about that toward the latter days of the Great Recession. But I mean, it's just idiotic. I mean, it's mind boggling that Apple can answer the phone within a couple of rings when I want to spend $200 and buy an iPod Touch, but a mortgage company that has a $200,000 mortgage on one of my properties can't answer the phone with a person in the United States that's not reading a script, you know, and it takes 45 minutes. You know, why is that? That's just so illogical to me, you know?
I agree. And I saw it countless times. Again, I was a broker during that whole time and helped agents do short sales and you know, kind of modify their business to go after that market. And the responses that you get from banks were just, there was no basis in reality. And I do agree with the somewhat conspiratorial thought that I think a lot of them, they would prefer them to go into foreclosure, because then they were able to get mortgage insurance and they were able to count all of the payments as income. And sometimes it made much more sense for a house to go into foreclosure. They made more money off of it than they did during a short sale. And so they were acting in a real counterintuitive way, because the system had been set up to incentivize them to go into foreclosure rather than short sale or deal with the real live people. And so it was kind of just a bizarre system. And I lived in an area where a lot of my neighbors did strategic foreclosures. In an area of about 80 homes, about 20 of them did a strategic foreclosure. I felt like a chump being the one paying my bill every month.
That's the way I felt in the 90s when I was a traditional realtor doing short sales for all these clients. I kind of felt like, oh, these clients are a bunch of deadbeats. This really makes me mad. I'm a chump because I'm not taking advantage of this, you know, free money giveaway, and I'm paying all my mortgages. You know, it was just... Yeah, no, it's, you know, the world doesn't make any sense a lot of times, and this is one of those times. But anyway, enough of that. Okay, hey, we got to wrap up. Give out your website, tell people where they can find out more, and just any closing comments.
Well, first of all, my website is www.saundersdaily.com, which is SaundersDaily.com. And you can come to our site and look at real estate investments that you want to participate in. And I will just reiterate that I think you're right. This is a game changer. It is a huge impact to our economy. And I think we're going to move from the sharing economy to the owner economy, where a person of pretty average means can walk down the street and say, hey, I own part of that restaurant. I own part of that coffee shop. I own part of that building. And it will be very empowering and very interesting.
And hopefully there will be some new ways to track all this stuff, or there will be some standardizations that will be implemented so people aren't getting ripped off, you know, and like kind of like gap accounting and Sarbanes-Oxley, but, you know, maybe for the smaller world. So we'll see. It's interesting to as it develops. Marshall, thank you so much for joining us. Really interesting conversation.
Thank you very much. It was very pleasant.
I've never really thought of Jason as subversive, but I just found out that's what Wall Street considers him to be.
Really? Now, how is that possible at all?
Simple. Wall Street believes that real estate investors are dangerous to their schemes because the dirty truth about income property is that it actually works in real life.
I know. I mean, how many people do you know, not including insiders, who created wealth with stocks, bonds, and mutual funds? Those options are for people who only want to pretend they're getting ahead.
Stocks and other non-direct traded assets are a losing game for most people. The typical scenario is you make a little, you lose a little, and spin your wheels for decades.
That's because the corporate crooks running the stock and bond investing game will always see to it that they win. This means, unless you're one of them, you will not win.
And unluckily for Wall Street, Jason has a unique ability to make the everyday person understand investing the way it should be. He shows them a world where anything less than a 26% annual return is disappointing.
Yep, and that's why Jason offers a one-book set on creating wealth that comes with 20 digital download audios. He shows us how we can be excited about these scary times and exploit the incredible opportunities this present economy has afforded us.
We can pick local markets untouched by the economic downturn, exploit packaged commodities investing, and achieve exceptional returns safely and securely.
I like how he teaches you how to protect the equity in your home before it disappears, and how to outsource your debt obligations to the government.
And this set of advanced strategies for wealth creation is being offered for only $197.
To get your Creating Wealth Encyclopedia Book 1, complete with over 20 hours of audio, go to jasonhartman.com/store.
If you want to be able to sit back and collect checks every month just like a banker, Jason's Creating Wealth Encyclopedia series is for you. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, all rights reserved. For distribution or publication rights and media interviews, please visit www.hartmanmedia.com or email media@hartmanmedia.com. Nothing on this show should be considered specific personal or professional advice. Please consult an appropriate tax, legal, real estate, or business professional for individualized advice. Opinions of guests are their own, and the host is acting on behalf of Platinum Properties Investor Network, Inc., exclusively.